So thought is responsible for both pleasure, pain, fear. And also thought is afraid of being completely lonely. Thought has already condemned it. And so thought invents a way of escaping from that loneliness through various forms of religious entertainments or cultural something or other. The everlasting search for deeper and wider dependencies. So thought is responsible. Then what is one to do? You understand all this, I hope. What is one to do when one realizes that thought, which is the response of memory to any challenge, minor or major, which sustains both pleasure and fear. These are all facts, not the speaker's invention or his peculiar philosophy or theory. These are absolute, daily, observable facts. Then the next question is, what is one to do? There is thought. You can't kill it. You can't destroy it. You say, well, you can't say, I'll forget it. You can't resist it. If you do, that's another form of thought. Thought is the response of memory. And you need that memory to function daily. To go to your office, to go to your home, to be able to talk. That memory is the storehouse of your technological knowledge. So you need memory completely. And also you see how memory sustains fear through thought. Having had pleasure yesterday, seeing the beauty of that lovely sunset, and you want that again repeated, that same experience, either through drug or through going to that particular spot, look at that exquisite light. And when it doesn't happen, there is pain, disappointment, frustration. So thought. You need memory with all the purity and clarity of thought in one direction. Technologically, to function daily, to earn a livelihood and so on. And also, you see, there is the fact that thought also breeds fear. So what is one to do? What is the mind to do? You have understood the question? Is it clear? You are putting the question to yourself. I am not putting the question to you. If you are accepting my question, the speaker's question, then it's not your question. If it is your question, and which it must be, after this examination, if it is not, you are asleep. If it is your own, then how will you answer it? How will you answer this question after having gone through the various facts of analysis, of time, of escape, of dependency, see that a movement away from what is fear. The movement itself is fear. After observing all that, seeing the truth of all that, not opinion, not your casual judgment. What is your answer to this question? That thought must function most efficiently, sanely, and yet that very thought becomes a danger, because it breeds fear. Now, before you answer that question, what is the state of the mind that has gone through all this? You understand what I mean? What is the state of the understanding of your mind, the mind that has examined all the various forms which have been exposed, which has been explained or observed? What is the quality of your mind now? Because on that quality, you're going to answer. Right? If you have not taken the journey, you have no answer. But if you have actually taken the journey, step by step, and gone into everything that we have discussed, then your mind, you will see, has become extraordinarily intelligent, alive, sensitive, because they've thrown off all the burden that it has accumulated. Then, the question is, how do you observe this whole process of thinking? Is there a center from which you think? Do follow all this, please. The center being as the censor, the one who judges, evaluates, condemns, justifies. Do you still think from that center? Or there is no center from which to think at all, but you think. Right? You see the difference? Is this all getting too much? Oh, do tell me, please. No? I'm surprised. You're merely listening, I'm afraid. Look, sir. Thought has created a center as the me. Me, my opinions, my country, my God, my experience, my house, my furniture, my wife, my children, my country, you know, me. That is the center from which you act, think. That center divides. And that because of that center and that division, there must be conflict. Obviously. When it is your opinion against somebody else's opinion, my country and your country, you know, all that. Division. Which means the center is always dividing. And if you think from that center and observe from that center fear, you are still caught in fear. Because that center has separated itself from the thing it has called fear. And therefore it says, I must get rid of it, I must analyze it, I must overcome it, resist it, and so on. So you are strengthening fear. So can you look, can the mind look at fear, which you are going to a little bit more, without the center? Can you look at that fear without naming it? Because the moment you say fear, it is already in the past, because you have named it. You're following all this? Because the moment you name something, don't you divide it? The white and the black and the brown and the communist, and don't you? And so that very division is a form of resistance, conflict, and fear. So the question is to observe without that center and not to name the thing called fear as it arises. All this requires tremendous discipline. You know, the word discipline means to learn. To learn from somebody. You're not learning from the speaker. You're learning from yourself. And to observe all this very closely, with care, which means with affection and attention. Then the mind is looking without the division as a center to which it has been accustomed to. Therefore, there is an ending of fear, both the hidden and the open. If you haven't done it this evening, don't take it home and think about it. Truth is something that you must say immediately. And to see something clearly and immediately, you must give your heart and your mind and your whole being. Right, sir. Now perhaps you'd ask questions if you care to.
Fear, in essence, fearing fear, that we should accept fear instead?
No, sir. Don't accept anything. You see, sir, I don't know how to make it simple. Not to accept, sir, but to look at fear. You see, you have never looked at fear, have you? You've never said, well, I am afraid, let me look. Have you done that? Or you said, I'm afraid, let me turn on the radio. Or go to church, or pick up a book. Or resort to a belief, a movement away. So you have never looked at fear. You have never come directly into communication with it. You have never come directly in contact with it. Moment you say, my wife, see what you have done. The image that you have built about her or the husband, that image is in contact with the other image. Therefore, the relationship is between image and image. In the same way, to look at fear without naming it, without running away from it, without trying to overcome it, just to be with it, without any movement away from it, you do it. And you will see a very strange thing happen. Yes, sir.
After you meet the fear, can you become it?
Big part?
After you meet the fear, can you become it?
After you meet fear, can you become it? You are fear. How can you become it? You haven't done, sorry, I'm not, sir, I don't know how to explain this. You are fear. Only the mind, thought, has separated itself from the fear, not knowing what to do with it. Therefore, it resists it. Therefore, having divided itself from fear, it becomes the observer of that fear, and resists that fear or escapes from that fear. But the observer, the one who resists, is also fear.
A great deal of frustration exists because people are not permitted to tape record the lectures privately. Could you tell us why, please?
Yes, not sir. Only I'll tell you. Very simple.
I have two.
Right, sir.
First of all, psychologically, why would they want to or take notes? And secondly, is the physical part of it. Why are they not allowed to or not permitted to?
Right. First of all, if you're taking and recording this talk, it's very disturbing to your neighbor. You're fiddling with it and putting your hand, you know, all the rest of it. Second, what is important? To listen directly now to what is being said? Or take it home and leisure listen to it? Which is important? When he is talking, when the speaker is saying, time, don't allow time to interfere. Right? And he said, well, I'll record what you're saying and take it home. Surely, fear is now. You have it in your heart, in your mind. You may be not actually at this moment, it's there. Oh Lord, not as she are. I beg your pardon, sir. Wait, sir. Look at it, sir. Forget the foundation, white paper, tape. Kick it all overboard. Just listen, sir. Which is important? To listen directly to what is being said while you are here? Is that the most important thing? Because you have taken all the trouble to come here, and the speaker has taken all the trouble to come here also. And we are trying to communicate together now. Right? Wait, listen to 2 minutes. Listen to it. Right? You are trying to understand it now, not tomorrow. And the understanding of that now is the highest importance. And therefore you must give all your attention to it. Wait. And you cannot give all your attention if you are taking notes. If you are paying half attention to your tape recorder, holding this thing up and all the rest of it. You may not understand all this immediately. So, you may want to listen to it again. Then, you buy a tape or don't buy a tape, book or not book. That's all. If you could take all this that has been said this evening, in an hour and 10 minutes, completely absorb it, totally with your heart and mind, it's finished. You haven't done it, unfortunately. Wait, sir. Have you? Because you haven't given your mind to all this before. Because you have accepted fear, you've lived with fear. Fear has become your habit. And what the speaker is saying is to shatter all that. And your speaker says, do it now, not tomorrow. Just a minute, sir. There's so many. Half a minute, sir. So if that is clear, because our minds are not used to seeing the total nature of fear, what is implied. And if you could see it immediately, you will never want to. You'll be out of this hall with ecstatic mind. But most of us are not capable of doing that immediately. And therefore, the tape's finished. Right, sir?
What about if you're observing fear and then you find yourself moving away? Like you said to observe it directly, but what if you observe it but then you find yourself moving away? What do you do?
You observe it and you observe fear and find yourself moving away from it. What are you to do? First of all, don't resist moving away. Move away. Go with it. And come back to fear again. Right, sir? Look, to observe fear, please listen to this very simple fact. To observe fear, you must give attention, mustn't you? You must give attention. Attention being, don't condemn, don't judge, don't even, just observe. And when you move away, your attention has wandered. Right? Isn't it? Now, which is, you are not attending. You have There is inattention, right? Be inattentive. But be aware that you are inattentive. Right? That very awareness of your inattention is attention. Right? You've got it? Have you got this? So look, sir. Please look what is implied. To give to observe fear, you must give your whole attention. Which means to look without judgment, not to condemn it, not to resist it, to look at it with your heart, with your mind. As you are looking, you are wandering off, which is you become inattentive. Now, don't resist inattention. Don't try to become attentive. Then you fight it. Then there is a conflict. But if you are attentive, if you are aware that you are inattentive, be aware of it. Don't do anything about it. But be aware that you are inattentive. Then that very awareness is attention. Got it? No, do get this. It's so simple. Wait, sir. Once you get this, then you will eliminate conflict altogether. You see, you are aware with choice. When you say, I have been attentive, and now I am not attentive, and I must become attentive. There is a choice. And to be aware means to be aware without choice. Therefore, when you are inattentive, be inattentive. Be inattentive. And know you are inattentive. That very knowledge that you are inattentive is attention.
Sir,
that lady asked, sorry.
Well, you were talking a great deal about fear and freedom from fear. Now, somehow, in order to be free from fear, in itself, don't we have to analyze why we have our fear and what the fear actually is within ourselves? Like, for instance, some people, they say, are so afraid of themselves, they try to escape themselves. Like, when I was a child, up until about age 11, say, I was afraid of thunderstorms. And whenever there was one, I would get going again to my parents' bed because of that fear. Until one day, it was the day I went up into the mountains, and there was a thunderstorm, and I got out and faced that fear, and I came to realize that the thunderstorm couldn't possibly do any harm to me.
What are you saying, madam?
Well, it's the same thing. The people say that they are, as I was afraid of the thunderstorm, as I was saying before. And I was trying to analyze why I was afraid of that thunderstorm and why I tried to escape it.
Madam, this is not...
Which is a pretty common fear, I'm sure. Why is this fear so common?
We have been through all that this morning, this earlier part of this. Yes, sir.
I have a problem that I've been in school for 23 years now, 24 years, well, practically, and I don't know anything else. It's my whole life. So the problem comes as to whether I'm not dependent on the school and on its immediate environment, and I'm not afraid, and whether I'm afraid to leave school and go out, you know, into the regular world. I have an academic life in front of me. And yet I also tell myself that well, this is simply the situation I can function in the best, an academic situation. That's what I've always known. Therefore, I shouldn't leave it because I can act best and most efficiently. It's my language, the academic language, and so forth. So the question is, then, am I in fear, and is it only my dependency that keeps me here working and doing what my professors tell me to do?
Sir, I'm not answering your question, but I'm asking myself why we depend on anything. I depend on the milkman, the postman, the policeman, and all the rest of it. But there are other forms of dependencies. Depending on my job, psychologically. Depending on my profession. Depending on the audience sitting in front of me. Because if I depend on the audience sitting in front of me, I derive certain pleasure from it. It sustains me. And therefore I depend. And then there is fear. So the question is, can the mind be free of dependency, psychologically? Not to depend, which means to have no fear. When you depend on another, is it love? And most people depend on another, on the wife, husband, whatever it is, and therefore love goes overboard, pleasure takes its place, and fear comes in. And then one dominates the other. And all the rest of the nasty business of a family. Whereas, when there is no dependency at all, family has quite a different meaning. Yes, sir.
If pleasure and fear are related, if we can remove fear, then do you think that we can enjoy pleasure completely?
If, as you say, fear and pleasure are related, can one remove fear and so enjoy completely pleasure? Lovely, won't it be, huh? Lovely question and lovely idea. Take away all my fears so that I can enjoy myself in my pleasures. That's everybody right through the world asks the same thing. Some very crudely, some very subtly. Can you escape? Can you get rid of fear and hold on to pleasure? Pleasure. Smoke. You smoke. It's a pleasure. There is pain within it. Because you may get a disease. Pleasure. You have had pleasure with the man or the woman, sexually or otherwise, comfort and so on. And when that person looks away, you're jealous, angry, frustrated, mutilated. So pleasure inevitably brings pain. And we're not saying you cannot have pleasure. See the whole structure of it. And you will know then that joy is not pleasure. Real enjoyment, the beauty of enjoyment, the freedom, has nothing whatsoever to do with pleasure and therefore with pain or fear. If you see that, the truth of it, then you will understand pleasure and give it its proper place. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
I think that there are always times in life when we're confronted with a duty, And sometimes this duty takes every ounce of energy that we have, both physical energy and spiritual energy. For example, a job or a family or so forth. My question is, how can one maintain the spirit of recollection or the unfragmentation that you were discussing yesterday while being involved with these duties?
I wonder why we use the word duty. Such an ugly word. Isn't there a difference between duty and affection and love? Isn't there a responsibility with love, not duty? Duty is an ugly word used by the politicians and the priests. And you use that word to condemn yourself, which means that you are no longer loving, being affectionate. So to find out, sir, what love is as important to find out what fear is. When there is the ending of fear, then there is the beginning of love. Then you will never use the word duty. Yes, sir, but it's 8:20. Right, sir. Isn't it enough for this evening? Right, sir, what?
Well,
that gentleman was asking. Yes, sir.
Dr. Krishnamurti, I have two questions. In the beginning of your talk, you said one must be serious in order to live life properly. There are other men that would say one must have sense of humor concerning all aspects of life. Is your statement differing and entirely opposite to this one?
No, sir. To be serious means also to laugh.
So I laugh serious. Okay, my second question is, you define different kinds of fear, but aren't there some fears that are useful at least for survival? For example, I'm very much afraid of jumping from the Empire State Building, and
yes,
I would like to keep that fear.
Surely. Now wait a minute, look at it. When physically you face a danger, the natural response is self-protection. Physical survival. Is that fear or is it intelligence? Now, we don't apply that same intelligence with regard to fear. The inward fears, psychological fears. Look at this, sir, very simply. The world has divided itself into nationalities and religious groups and political groups. This division is bringing about war, hatred, and that very war is destroying us. Though we think through nationalism we shall have security. So when one realizes all this, intelligence becomes extraordinarily important. And you know when that intelligence is operating, and it can operate only when there is no fear. Enough, sir. Sorry. Don't, please. May I request you not to clap? Do what you like. But don't clap, because you're not entertaining me. You're not applauding me. If you want to clap, go outside and do it. Or do it when I'm not here.